Hello, gamers, and welcome to another exciting edition of Game Warp. I'm Elwood.
I'm Kim.
And this is our review of Concrete Genie. Concrete Genie is a game released last year, right at the tail end. And it was a game there was a lot of buzz about when we saw it at E3. And despite all this buzz, it sort of quietly slipped in under the radar, much like the last Soul Calibur. It sort of came out and nobody realised it was actually out. And it sort of put out there that perhaps this game had failed in some way to live up to the massive hype. Because, I mean, this is a little indie game, and at the E3 it was sort of like this game that everyone wanted to talk about. It looked absolutely stunning, and as we know from experience at E3, just because something looks pretty on the floor doesn't mean that it's actually going to be so pretty when we actually get to play it as gamers. So we were kind of obviously interested to check this one out, and it's actually a very reasonable price, which works out quite well for the very short runtime of the game. But Kim, what's your sort of opening thoughts of Concrete Genie?
I mean, I think that if you were talking about Concrete Genie in terms of expectation, right, the main elements of Concrete Genie that really drew us to the game was its painting element.
Yeah.
And how colorful, and those adorable little monsters that kind of like run around the screen or whatever. And it looks like such a beautiful game. And I think that in terms of the painting and the colorfulness and just the whole, that whole game mechanic element, it's implemented really well because you do spend a lot of time doing that. There's a lot of like different forms of achievements to it, depending on, you know, how much achievements you are going for. And it works in that sense because like, that's what you were trying, like, that's what the game is trying to, it was trying to sell itself as. And on that level, I think it lived up to at least my expectations. I don't know about you.
Yes, for myself, I mean, obviously the main appeal is when we saw those painting mechanics and the fact that you could create graffiti in this very grey city and bring it all this colour and life, and the paintings themselves would have all this life to them. And then it was sort of, how is this going to work? I mean, first off, it's a painting mechanic, and we're here using a DualShock controller, so it's not the most worldly of things. It's like when you try and play strategy games with the DualShock, it's not going to give you the same responsiveness as a mouse would. So to actually see those painting mechanics and that they actually, you know, lived up to expectations was really kind of exciting to see. And at the same time, it soon becomes sort of clear that this is a game, much like Seasons After Fall and Abzu, where you're sort of playing it as, and it's more kind of like a relaxation experience. And like, I think also like much like Journey, which the development company Pixelopolis actually come from the same sort of stable as the studio that put that one out, that game company. Foster City Studio, also known as Sam Mato Studio, basically set up a game development program for students at Carnegie Mellon University, and they gave them Vitas. And they were basically really excited to see these little prototype games that they were putting out. And this, in turn, they turned into a little development program, and they took students from there and from San Jose State University and threw in some industry veterans to sort of lead the team and form this production company. Now, their initial game was Entwined, which didn't really set the world on fire back in 2014. So this is a real chance for the company to sort of redeem themselves. And I think they certainly have for this PlayStation 4 exclusive. And the fact that when we look at the exclusives that are on from the more independent side for PlayStation, they normally have this real sort of Japanese sort of slant to them, and sort of those sort of manga and anime sort of feel to them. And here we have a game which is very sort of unique. It's very much its own sort of thing, and has created this wonderful world where you're playing this art student named Ash, who's basically minding his own business. He's in this town where everything's very grey and lifeless, and these bullies basically arrive, steal a sketchbook and tear out the pages and send him to this haunted lighthouse. And over the course of the game, you've got to collect your art pages back and, you know, bring color back to this town of Denshka, which is basically what all you have to do in the game. There's some mild puzzle solving, and it's not until you get to the end that you get any sort of real threat at all. So it's a very sort of relaxing experience, I found.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's exactly like... The main purpose of the game is twofold. One is to collect back your pages and reawake the city with your magic brush. And the second is to avoid the bullies. So the easy way to avoid the bullies, because they're pretty stagnant in one location, unless something happens, like you've unlocked another zone and then they kind of shift themselves somewhere else. And then there's always one page or something that ends up near them, and you need to kind of fool them in another direction, run down and grab it, and then go back. So they're really just that's the main threat. But, I mean, through the course of the story itself as it unfolds, moving from chapter to chapter, we do run across them every single time. And they become kind of a threat, but not really, because they're meant to be in the story.
Yeah.
I haven't quite... you know, had the moment where, because, you know, running across the rooftops and ziplining between them and stuff like that, you easily can evade them. So it's not really like they'll catch you. So I've never really been caught by them other than when it's an actual cutscene. I just wonder if something happens when that happens. Like, have you ever been caught by them?
Yeah, I've been caught by them. Basically, all that happens is you're just thrown in a dumpster and then you just get to go on your way. There's no penalty at all.
Okay.
And this is why, this is again why I put it in that same sort of category as Abzu and Seasons After Four. I mean, both those games, you can die. I mean, with Abzu, you could die, but it was right at the end of the game and it was just this one sequence. But even then, there was no sort of real penalty for you dying. And here, there's no real penalty if you're captured by the bullies. It's more of an inconvenience. And the fact that you can sort of move between the rooftops like Nathan Drake. it's sort of like there's very few occasions where you find yourself having to have any real issues with these bullies. They're just there to provide some sort of minor threat to the game. And It's always unusual when you have these sorts of games where you don't have this sort of threat. It's sort of like, who is this game designed for exactly?
Yeah, but I mean, like, what works... I mean, the bullies themselves are, I think, the main purpose of the game in their kind of subtle and not subtle way is Denshka, if we look further into the story, because it's not said so clearly unless you read all the newspaper articles, which, honestly, I was a bit lazy and I didn't really read through with them very clearly. But I mean, Denshka was affected by an oil spill, and that's one of the reasons of why the water is polluted, and then they're starting to have all this purple stuff that's been floating up in the water and destroying the city, essentially destroying the city to be this kind of ghost town, because their main thing is a fishing port, and that's no longer their issue. So the story itself brings up some environmental issues. And at the same time, on a more, I guess, society level, it brings up the kind of the uprising, kind of like the discussion of bullies and just the reasoning behind bullying and having other problems, because we soon see the magic brush bring out some of the memories of flashbacks of kind of like these other characters that run around are these bullies who have these very sad situations at home that cause them to be this way, to kind of lash out at the world. And in this case, as a group, they lash out at Ash.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing. The only same issue that this entire have with Ash is just the fact he's this art nerd. There's no... It's this very sort of base level sort of characterization you have for these characters. Yes, all the characters are interesting to look at, but they don't exactly... We're not talking about sort of world-class storytelling here. It's all very much sort of base level stuff. The real sort of draw of the game is just going out there and... Some may call it graffitiing, but the game wants you to see it as bringing life back to the city as you create these murals on the walls. And this is where the game really sort of comes into its own as the further you get, the more stencils you get to add to your art collection. And it's through these stencils you build up murals. Certain areas require you to use certain stencils, very much like Little Big Planet in that respect. And other walls just give you complete freedom. And as we mentioned already, you have the power to of these genies, who are these monsters that you can create. And they got the abilities of fire and electricity and wind, which are mainly used there to solve problems. And it's fun just seeing how that they follow you around once you put a genie onto the wall, and they interact with your murals as well, which is kind of exciting. So
yes, and you know what's really nice is that, you know, you have this concept of super paint, and you need to please your genies, and your genies are like little humans or like little pets. They follow you around and they want you to play with them, and in the little sequence of the game you end up like seeing a cat, and then they want to play with a cat and pet the cat, and that's only one example. And you have other little things where they're running around the walls, and all of a sudden their face bubble, like they have like the word bubbles that pop up, and then it's like the thing that they want you to paint on this wall. And then if you paint it, they give you super paint, and then they give you lots of like hearts float out of them. And you know, I think another really good is what's really charming is you create these genies. So in that sense, they already have set what kind of elements this genie is going to have, what abilities they will have in that different zone of the game that you're in. But you get to add on whatever you want. So you can add on whatever stencils you've picked up. You can try it out on them, add tails and horns and little things and whatnot. I have some like incredibly weird looking ones. but to me, they're super adorable. And then you see them, like, you know, you can wave your brush and then ask them to help you with things. And it's like, over here. And then you see them, like, their little bubbles running around the walls and where they are. And then they start, like, running goofily towards you on the wall. And it's just, it's so charming. It's just, like, everything they've thought of is, it's such a happy game that even if the story isn't too fleshed out, and the city is so dark that you're bringing back to life in this sense, like they're calling it, right? It's so charming, and it's so cute, and it's so fun, and it's really uplifting because you can see that these little imaginations that Ash originally designed and that flew out of his notebook, when you put them all back together now, it's just kind of like he's in his little world, and the only thing, and he's just exploring the city of Denska. So we get to see different areas and how different parts are, and it's interesting. I think that even the city itself is designed to be really nice, right down to, you know, just all the different types of sketches you can do. The billboards are more like a paint by numbers style, where you have to follow whichever stencil that you need to bring that billboard back to life. And then, you know, you have little sketches on the walls, which you need to call your genies, and then they tell you what is supposed to be on that wall, and then it's like a bonus because those are unnecessary to do. But you have like all these little things, and they all add up to this experience of, I think one of the main points of Concrete Genie and why it excels in itself is that it never forgets that, like, the heart of the game was the painting element. And we get this painting element throughout. So when you're running around too much, your genies will pop up on a wall and they'll be like, I want this on the wall, you know? And it's just so charming that it's kind of like interacting with, more of like a little pet. And I don't know, I think that that's what makes it. Maybe the game feels like there's no enemies, but then there are other games that have no other enemies that are, you know, even horror games like, what is that horror game? The psychedelic one. Give me a second.
I'm trying to think. Whenever I think of, like, ones without enemies, my mind instantly goes to, like, all the walking simulators we played, you know, things like Firewatch Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, and even though those games don't have enemies, they're still very enduring and engaging experiences.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even if you think about it, I know that a lot of people discussed it because of Layers of Fear is a game that I'm talking about. And Layers of Fear also has no threat. No actual threat in the game. And because it's a horror game, a lot of discussion on it is how engaging that experience is. For myself, I found Layers of Fear, like, in the most psychedelic and weird way, like, what such a great experience to play. It was scary, it was kind of got under your skin, and it didn't need the enemy. But to other people who really like enemies, and expects it in a horror game, well, definitely without the threat, a horror game is probably less horrifying. But then, I mean, Layers of Fear is about psychological elements. So if you take that into the concept, it's building an atmosphere and building that world up. And in Concrete Genie, the world that they build, Denska and the little characters, and just having those little cutscenes and how the whole thing is just sculpted, it's kind of like you have this kind of open world element where you go zone to zone and you have all these things to find. And the game itself doesn't need to be complicated because the world itself is already enthralling enough. Just, you know, painting walls and stuff. Sometimes you don't need something too deep, I think. And for me, at least, I thought it was a really like positive experience. It made me very happy.
Oh, definitely so. And the fact that you don't even have to be good at art or have any sort of like artistic bone, you can still, everything you paint will always come out looking really, really fun and exciting and fresh. And as I said, the more of the city you paint, the more everything brightens up, and it's the ability is also there to go back and redo painting as you get more stencil pieces. So there's always the ability there to mold the sort of town as you want. And I have to obviously ask, I mean, how did you find the genies themselves in actually handling them, making them go where you want? Because we've seen other games with the NPC, like Ikkyo and The Last Guardian, where you seem to be shouting constantly at the screen because the bloody NPC won't do what you want. But for myself, I found that, you know, the genies were, I think probably because they were, had such a small area which they needed to be guided to, I found them pretty responsive. But I don't know about your personal experience with them.
Yeah, I mean, if you compare it to, say, The Last Guardian is the one you're talking about, right?
Yeah. What did I say?
The Last Guardian is hell and a half to get Trico to come. we're not even finished that game yet. I'm playing it with my husband right now. We kind of gave up a little. We're taking a break because it was so frustrating. But I think in sense of Concrete Genie, I think that's one of the things that might need to be polished a little. If it was for me, because I think there was one specific part, one or two parts where I called the genie and my walls were all lit up and they would just stop at the corner and they didn't turn the corner. And then I had to like run around and start waving my brush nonstop. And then I ran back and then they, all of a sudden they would be on like doing what I wanted them to do. And I had no idea why. It wasn't like they had, like, they needed me to do something for them. Yeah. It wasn't any of that. They just didn't want to go across a corner. And I thought it was just, like, the wood in the doorway was causing the problem. But I was like, that's not the problem, because they go on walls. They don't go through the objects. So anyways, that was one of my little experiences. But overall, I mean, they're fairly easy. It's just sometimes you don't know if they're coming, because unless they're, like, around the corner, you don't really see the bubble of them coming towards you. So you have to stand there and wave and just kind of wait it out.
Yeah, great. I'm sure I think I feel that we haven't covered it. Obviously, this game, we have said at the start of the review, it is quite short. You're looking at about 5 to 6 hours of gameplay if you're just sort of powering on through. But obviously, it sort of relies more on you wanting to, you know, stop and smell the roses and maybe paint some roses to sort of really get the most out of this game. And as I said before, I mean, this is a game that I think would be really great if it was made the transfer onto the Switch. Because it sort of adapts well to that sort of pick-up and play sort of gameplay. But on the PlayStation 4, it was still a very enjoyable experience. There is obviously the option there to play in VR if you want. Although, to be honest, I don't know exactly what a VR experience would add to this game, especially the way that it's sort of set up in the third person. So, but would you want to see a follow-up to Concrete Genie? Because for myself, it felt like the game said all it pretty much wanted to say with this first game, and felt very much like Abzu and Journey and these sort of Artile sort of games of just being this one-off experience, more sort of like almost like a programming experiment. It's sort of like, oh, look what we can create and what we can do,
yeah.
Than something that's looking to sort of establish a franchise here.
I think that one game is enough for Concrete Genie, because unless they do something like kind of what Life is Strange is doing, where they're creating a world, but with another ability. That would be interesting to see a world, like, it's like a magical world, where there's going to be another kid who's going to see something else, and it's going to be another issue that goes on in their life, and it's another adventure, but not a painting one, maybe some other angle. That could be one way to do it. But in terms of the whole painting element and Concrete Genie and every and the story that it told in Concrete Genie, I think that one story kind of did it all. You don't really need to go further with it. But what Concrete Genie does prove for Pixel Opus is that they have a lot of strength behind them, especially now that they're part of the Sony Interactive Entertainment kind of company. They're part of that development housing, right? Under that wing now, that they have a lot of, because of the success of this one, it's going to give them that power to build, to prove that they can build even better games and really pretty games, colorful games, with probably a little bit more like messages and meanings about just the things around us.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of everything else I'm saying. I think while the game is certainly, you know, as we said earlier, it's a fun and enjoyable experience, and it's the sort of game that you play when you want to sort of chill out, rather than if you're looking for sort of a very challenging or engrossing experience. I don't think this is the sort of game that you can sort of sit and grind away at for hours on, especially as the sort of, it only sort of has one move to it, and the fact that the combat is kept right to the end of the game, it just felt like a very confusing move on the move of the developers, really. And you would have perhaps benefited from having it more scattered for the game. I think it wouldn't have taken away from anything from this sort of fantastical world that they're creating, but it certainly would have given us a little more variety in the gameplay than just hide away from incompetent bullies.
Yeah, I mean, if there was something to criticize the game about it, as much as I enjoyed it, you are right that I wouldn't sit down and play it for excessive amount of time. I think my max sitting in one gameplay for this one was about an hour and a half, something like that. But I mean, it would be nice to have a little bit more variety. I was hoping that at the end of every chapter, we would have some kind of new ability come up or some other element that would come into play. And a lot of times, that was what kind of didn't happen. I was kind of expecting it to happen, and it didn't. You would just kind of have more pages, and just keep looking for pages,
yeah.
Keep doing genies, keep painting walls. You keep thinking that there's going to be a change in the next part, maybe with the area. But the thing that changes is only the type of genie that you make and the abilities that they're able to do and the puzzles that you're going to encounter because of the different element that you need. Like, you know, you're going to need electricity, and so you'll have an electricity kind of genie who's going to help you power up your stuff. And then you're going to have, you know, like in the beginning we had the fire one and that sort of thing. And each chapter brought a different need for the genie. But is that a new gameplay? And are the puzzles hard enough? Like, does it increase in difficulty? I would say it doesn't. But, I mean, like we said through the whole thing, it's pretty much, there's not a lot of variety, but the game experience itself is still fun enough in smaller doses that it's a fairly fun experience, and it's colorful, and there's a lot of, like, cuteness to it. So it makes up for a lot of the flaws.
So what would we rate Concrete Genie? Is this a game that lived up to the E3 hype, or has it sort of been a crushing disappointment now we finally got our hands on it?
I would say it lived up to expectations. Because from the start, I mean, I would give it about like a 4 stars. And 4 stars would be mostly because there's a lot of like joy in it and a lot of polish in the gameplay. And they delivered what they were trying to sell the whole time. And what they were trying to sell the whole thing was a painting game, painting on walls and colorful and everything. And they lived up to that for me. There are little flaws to it, like we were talking about variety and whatnot, but overall it's a pretty enjoyable game, and I wouldn't mind sitting down and playing it again just to paint some walls and create some funky looking genies.
Fantastic. Much like yourself, it's the sort of game I really enjoyed playing. I really enjoyed the painting mechanics, and I felt that what it does very well. The only issue I have is just the general lack of threat, and here is one of those games where it just becomes very apparent all too soon the fact that you're never in any sort of real danger, which can be a little distracting from what the game was actually setting out to achieve. And but I certainly enjoyed the painting mechanics. I thought the game looks absolutely stunning, and I'm excited to see what they do next, even though currently looking on the Wikipedia page, there's nothing currently on the slate. So it'll be exciting to see what this is followed up by. But much like yourself, Kim, I'm going to give this also a 4 out of 5. So, well, thank you as always for listening. This brings us to the end of another edition of Game Warp. If you could... wherever you happen to be listening to us, make sure you hit the like and subscribe buttons, and maybe leave us a review and or a rating. It all helps raise the profile of the show.
We're currently we've moved all our podcast. The latest shows now are all going to be on YouTube in audio format as well. You can find our complete archive with all of our games and other reviews and all kinds of things on our blog, gamewarpblog.wordpress.com. You can head over there, check out our posts, and give us a follow. You can also see our updates on different little tidbits on gaming on Twitter and Facebook.
Yep.
At Game Warp Podcast. We're also on Instagram, where we share screenshots of games that we're playing, as well as like little gaming snacks and cute little things that we find. It's a little bit less active, seeing as we're all in as we're recording this in isolation. So, but you can find us at Game Warp Podcast also. Till next time, bye.